Our study tonight is out of Jeremiah chapter 40, verse 13 to chapter 41, verse 10. A lesson about not trusting other people prematurely. Interesting. As in the case of the survivors of Jerusalem's fall, people may so strongly desire peace and stability after a traumatic event that they prematurely trust even bad people. Yet Paul called us not to lay hands suddenly on anyone, either to ordain them or to receive them back into the church after church discipline. That's told us in 1 Timothy 5:22 and then 24 to 25. Let me just briefly look at that. 1 Timothy 5:22 says, "Lay hands suddenly on no man, neither be partaker of other men's sins. Keep thyself pure." And the laying on of hands could either be for ordaining a person or accepting a person back into the church fellowship following discipline. We can be too hasty in either way. And then Paul talks about how you solve this problem. Verse 24, "Some men's sins are open beforehand, going before to judgment, and some men they follow after." In other words, there are some people, because of their personalities, their sin is right out in front. You can see it in a hurry. There are other men who are very sinful, but you don't even see that sin for a while, and all of a sudden, whoa, here it comes. And then likewise, also, the good works of some are manifest beforehand, and they that are otherwise cannot be hid. There are other people, because of their personalities, they're good, and but sometimes that goodness is seen right up front. And other people, they're really good, but you don't see that until a while. Then after a while, it all of a sudden it shows up. I knew a professor at Dallas Seminary, and after a couple of years, I found out that every year the Internal Revenue Service called him down to the main office in Dallas, and they wanted to check his books. Well, the reason was the IRS was having problems believing that he was giving as much to charity or to the Lord's work as what he was claiming on his IRS. But he went down, he took his checks with him. There they were. And he'd been doing that for 10 or 15 years. But he was way off the charts as far as the percentage that he was giving compared to what the average American gives. So the IRS didn't believe him. It was Dr. Pentecost. He had to go down every year. And he says, "I had the checks there." So all they do is just shake their head. But there it is. I got the canceled checks. But that's a goodness that, you know, sometimes you don't see that goodness. You don't know that goodness until after the person is around the corner and off down the road somewhere. Well, the same is true with people in general who are bad. This was the challenge faced by Babylon's puppet governor Gedaliah in Jeremiah chapter 40, verse 13 to 41:10. And we view the account of it given in this passage for our insight and application. I'd like to read it first, and then we'll look at it. Jeremiah chapter 40, beginning to verse 13 and going to 41, verse 10. "Moreover, Johanan the son of Kareah and all the captains of the forces that were in the fields," these are the guerrilla leaders, "came to Gedaliah to Mizpah. And they said unto him, 'Dost thou certainly know that Baalis, the king of the Ammonites, has sent Ishmael the son of Nethaniah to slay you?' But Gedaliah the son of Ahikam did not believe them. Then Johanan the son of Kareah spoke to Gedaliah in Mizpah secretly, saying, 'Let me go, I pray thee, and I will slay Ishmael the son of Nethaniah, and no man shall know it. Wherefore should he slay you, that all the Jews which are gathered unto you should be scattered, and the remnant of Judah perish?' But Gedaliah the son of Ahikam said unto Johanan the son of Kareah, 'Thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely of Ishmael.' Now it came to pass in the seventh month that Ishmael the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the royal seat, and the princes of the king, even 10 men with him, came unto Gedaliah the son of Ahikam to Mizpah, and there they did eat bread together at Mizpah. Then arose Ishmael the son of Nethaniah and the 10 men that were with him, and smote Gedaliah the son of Ahikam the son of Shaphan with a sword, and slew him, whom the king of Babylon had made governor over the land. Ishmael also slew all the Jews that were with him, even with Gedaliah at Mizpah, and the Chaldeans that were found there, and the men of war. And it came to pass the second day, after he had slain Gedaliah, and no man knew it, that there came certain men from Shechem, from Shiloh, and from Samaria, even 80 men, having their beards shaven and their clothes rent, and having cut themselves with offerings and incense in their hand, to bring them to the temple of the Lord.
And Ishmael the son of Nethaniah went forth from Mizpah to meet them, weeping all along as he went. And it came to pass, as he met them, that he said to them, Come to Gedaliah the son of Ahikam. And it was so that when they came into the midst of the city, that Ishmael the son of Nethaniah slew them, and cast them into the midst of the pit, he and the men that were with him. But 10 men who were found among them, that said unto Ishmael, Slay us not, for we have treasures in the field of wheat and barley and of oil and of honey. So he forbare, and slew them not among their brethren. Now the pit wherein Ishmael had cast all the dead bodies of the men whom he had slain because of Gedaliah, was it which Asa the king had made for fear of Baasha king of Israel. And Ishmael the son of Nethaniah filled it with them that were slain. Then Ishmael carried away captive all the residue of the people that were in Mizpah, even the king's daughters and all the people that remained in Mizpah, and Nebuzaradan, the captain of the son, the guard, had committed to Gedaliah the son of Ahikam. And Ishmael the son of Nethaniah carried them away captive and departed in order to go over to the Ammonites. Okay. Gedaliah, Babylon's puppet governor, mistakenly, prematurely trusted a questionable party. In verses 13 to 16 of Jeremiah chapter 40, the leaders of the guerrilla units that had returned from the open fields to Gedaliah after Jerusalem's fall approached Gedaliah at Mizpah to warn him that Ishmael the son of Nethaniah, one of the parties that had approached Gedaliah at Mizpah, that had come to Gedaliah, had actually been sent by the king of Ammon to assassinate him. Now, this concern by these guerrilla unit leaders was certainly a reasonable one in view of Judah's recent past. First, Judah and Ammon, vassals of Babylon, had participated in a secret meeting of nations before Jerusalem fell, back in 593 BC, to assess the plan of unitedly rebelling against Babylon. Though that meeting had not itself produced any action, Egypt's pharaoh had then persuaded Judah, Ammon, and Tyre to revolt against Babylon, so Babylon had responded to this revolt by attacking and defeating Judah first, while Ammon was still yet not captured by Babylon. The reason for this is Babylon felt that she could not handle attacking Ammon and Judah and Tyre all at the same time. So he went after one, then he's going to go after the other, and then so forth. So he's just taking one out. Thus, puppet governor Gedaliah's devotion to Babylon was unsettling to the Ammonites, and it was to the Ammonite king's advantage to kill Gedaliah and replace him with an anti-Babylonian ruler that would keep Judah destabilized and require Babylon to keep troops there instead of attacking Ammon. So what he's trying to do is, the Ammonite king, it was in his interest to buy time. And the way he could buy time is by keeping things unsettled in Judah by assassinating the governor there, so the Babylonians would have to bring another force down and restore order. And that would just buy the Ammonite king some time, and hopefully he could maybe get some more help from somebody else before Babylon decided to attack him. Second, the Ammonite king's possible use of Ishmael was another valid use of concern. Ishmael was of Judah's royal line. This doesn't come out in the passage in chapter 40, but you'll notice chapter 41, verse 1, it came to pass the seventh month that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama, of the seed royal, that's of the Davidic line. Now, that's pretty important because he may have sided with Judah's past rulers who opposed Babylon since he was of the Davidic line. There's evidence that that happened because when he showed up, there were 10 men with him who were also of the Davidic line. And those men were in the plot with him to kill him. So it sounds like they were secretly siding with the Ammonites against the Babylonians. There's also another thing that I didn't put down here, and that is Ishmael, since he was of the royal seed, might have been angry that the Babylonians overlooked putting him in as governor, since he was of the line of David. And so he might have been mad, and he thought, well, if we do away with Gedaliah, maybe then I can be the ruler, or someday I can be the ruler or something, or the Ammonites will allow me to be the ruler there or something. So there's a lot of intrigue that's involved in this whole setup. So one of the guerrilla leaders, Johanan the son of Kareah, offered Gedaliah his services of secretly killing Ishmael the son of Nethaniah for the preservation of Gedaliah's administration. You know, he said, I know you want to keep peace and all that, but let me just take Nethaniah out, Ishmael, out the son of Nethaniah. I'll just take him out. I'll do it privately. It'll be a real clean job, and it won't create a ruckus, and everything will be peaceful, and you'll have a nice, peaceful administration. But having faced the trauma of war and assuming that people coming to him were tired of conflict, Gedaliah refused Johanan's offer, claiming he spoke evil about Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. Now, we know that Ishmael is going to kill Gedaliah here. What Gedaliah probably should have done, once he got this warning, he probably should have said, you know what, I don't want to be alone with Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. So since Johanan, the son of Kareah, is concerned about it, he could have said, let's have, if anybody's going to meet with me, all of the guerrilla leaders have to come at once. Otherwise, nobody's here. And that way, there would have been checks and balances with the men. But just having one set of the men come was dangerous. It might have been dangerous just having Johanan, the son of Kareah, because he didn't know if Johanan maybe had a secret plot as well. Maybe Johanan wanted to take his life. He didn't know. But the best thing to do is have everybody there. The shepherds back in the ancient Near East, often one shepherd would try to steal more water from a well than the other shepherds had. So what the shepherds did, if they came from different folds, they had a stone that went over the well that was too, like about 600 or 700 pounds. It was too heavy for one shepherd to carry. So you had to wait for all the shepherds to come there before you could roll the stone away, so everybody could check on everybody else on how they were using the water. So, you know, there would have been wisdom in Gedaliah at least taking some precautions, but he didn't do it. Gedaliah's trust in Nethaniah, in actually Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, proved to be premature, wrong, and thus lethal. I'm going to have to write that and change it to Ishmael there. Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, not Nethaniah. Anyway, Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, with a group of his supporters, deceived Gedaliah, pretended to be at a peace with him by eating with him, only then to assassinate him and all the Jews eating with him, along with a group of men who were arriving at Mizpah from Shechem to mourn the fall of Jerusalem. This was a tremendous cultural faux pas. If you ate with another person in the ancient Near East, as it is to this day, you are responsible, the host is responsible to protect the guests at that meal for, I think it's the next 3 days or 100-mile radius from the meal if the guest is traveling. Okay, so for him to kill this governor at that time after eating a meal with him was extremely, not only rude, it was a violation of culture. It was a breach of faith in the biggest form. Well, 10 of the men in this group persuaded Ishmael, 10 of the men who were coming to Shechem to mourn the fall of Jerusalem, persuaded Ishmael not to kill them with the promise that they could show them him where to find a trove of food that they'd hidden in a field somewhere. However, the pit where Ishmael threw the dead bodies of the men he had slain was the pit that Judah's king Asa had made out of fear of Israel's king Baasha 200 years before this. So the cistern that had been built to preserve life in Judah was now filled with their dead. This demonstrates that there's been a removal of God's protective blessing on the nation. There's been sin, and so that's what's happened. Gedaliah's presumption that Johanan had reviewed Ishmael too negatively had proved to be wrong, or Johanan's view of Ishmael had proved to be right, and of course, at great cost for Gedaliah and his administration. So Ishmael and his men also took captive the rest of the survivors at Mizpah, including Jeremiah, and headed toward the Ammonite kingdom, exposing his friendly ties with the Ammonites. So it looks like Johanan, the son of Kareah, was absolutely dead on target in regards to his concern about Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. So for prematurely trusting other people, Gedaliah lost his governorship, created ongoing civil unrest for Judah's survivals, and lost the lives of other innocent people, including his own life. So may we lay hands suddenly on no man, that we not be partaker of other men's sins, as taught in 1 Timothy 5, 22, and then 24 to 25. If we receive a warning about another party like Gedaliah received from Johanan, may we proceed with caution, realizing that either the one reporting the bad news may be erring or that he may be telling the truth. We must take precaution and give time for the truth to be seen. If we are in oversight positions, may we not let our emotions rule us, but keep our heads in all situations, that we evaluate all people with objective caution, care, and wisdom. This is an area where I have messed up on occasions, on several times. I've had a tendency to be too trusting, too early, and have gotten burned by it at times, even in the ministry. Because as a pastor, you have a heart, you want to help people and so forth, but you can let your guard down and really get stung. So there have been twice where there were men, Christian men, some in our church, outside of our church, who warned me about specific parties when they knew that specific parties were starting to come to the church. And I thought, no, wait a minute, this is probably slanderous. And so I just dismissed it. And they ended up being absolutely right, and I didn't know it. But what I do in the future is if I get this kind of a warning, I take it with a grain of salt, but exercise tremendous caution. And sometimes the report is bad. It's not good. Sometimes the report is actually valid. So you have to be very careful. But the point is, we need to be cautious. And when Paul says, lay hands suddenly on no man, there's a reason for it. There's a statement made about Jesus in John's Gospel, chapter 2. It says, Jesus did not entrust himself, the Greek word is to believe, Jesus did not entrust himself to all men, for he knew what was in man, and he didn't need anyone to tell him what was in man. So Jesus ministered, he was kind. But he was really careful because he could read people's, he could read their motives, of course he was God. But he just didn't leave himself vulnerable to people. And we need to be careful to test. The Bible says test the spirits to see whether they be of God, for there are many false prophets that are gone into the world. We also need to be careful about laying hands suddenly on any man. We have a little rule on people who come to our church. If they want to be members, they have to be in our church for minimum 6 months. And I talked to a person who recently started coming to our church, and they said, you know, Pastor, I really like the fact that you have, that's a good rule. I said, well, it gives us an opportunity to get to know people. It gives them an opportunity to get to know us. I mean, we have our own, you know, group of warts and moles and everything else, but we're not perfect. So we want people not to be surprised. So when they come to the membership classes, they know what they're getting into. They know what we believe. They know the people. And that way it makes for a smoother fit. But it's just wisdom that God has for us.